So as introduced, I'm Kyu-sung Hwang from University of Toronto. Today I'm going to talk about one of the, is this mic working? Okay. I'm going to talk about one of my recent work titled G2 gauge theory for balanced bond solid on the Kagome lattice. It's a pleasure to introduce my collaborators. Yejin He, she's a postdoc in Youngbak Kim's group at University of Toronto. And Youngbak Kim is my PhD advisor. This work is basically was done in collaboration with Yejin and Youngbak. So I'm going to start with a brief introduction on the Kagome lattice antiferromagnet. So antiferromagnetic insulating system on the Kagome lattice geometry have received a lot of interest from condensed matter society. Due to the frustrated competing interactions, the Kagome antiferromagnet can harbor various interesting exotic quantum states. Perhaps the spin rigid and balanced bond solid are the mostly studied exotic phases. As the simplest model, the spin half nearest neighbor Heisenberg model has been intensively studied in the past two decades. So various numerical techniques suggested different ground state candidate for this model. So for instance, U1 spin rigid from variation of Monte Carlo simulation and topological G2 spin rigid from density metrics with normalization group simulation. And lastly, the balanced bond solid state with 36-site unit cell from dynamo series expansion. So these three states are all energetically close to each other. And this means this indicate richness of exotic quantum state in the low energy space of Kagome antiferromagnets. So then what is the quantum spin rigid? Perhaps the simplest description of the quantum spin rigid would be the resonating balanced bond wave function. So which is basically the a linear combination of all possible spin singlet dimer product state with equal amplitude. So this RBB spin rigid respect all the symmetry in the system, and it support various kinds of elementary excitation. One of the excitation is a spinon carrying spin half moment. So basically, we break one single bond here, and then we get two free spin half degrees of freedom. And these two spin half degrees of freedom can move around due to the resonating balance bond in the background like this. And another type of excitation in this RBB wave function is a bijon in spin zero sector. So basically, this bijon is a non-local topological vortex excitation. Actually, this bijon is not easy to visualize in the spin language. So in fact, this bijon is a central object in my work. So I'm going to provide a more intuitive description of this excitation in the framework of effective G2 gauge theory later. So basically, the G2 gauge theory is basically essentially equivalent to a certain type of quantum dynamo model describing spin singlet sector in this Kagome lattice antiferromagnet. Okay. Next, another exotic quantum state is a balanced bond solid. The BBS state is basically crystalline order of balanced bonds, and this state is spontaneously break some of the lattice metrics. And so these two. Dimerization pattern shows the well-known balanced bond solid state in the context of a Kagome lattice antiferromagnet. In the left-hand side, there is a balanced turbocyte BBS state. This state is characterized. So this basically this state has a triangular arrangement of a diamond shape diamond configuration. This color, I color this diamond, but the color is too weak, so it's pretty difficult to see it. Anyway, so there is a diamond pattern here, 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 diamond pattern. So this diamond pattern forming a triangular arrangement in this case. In a different viewpoint, this state can be seen as a triangular arrangement of a star diamond configuration. So you can see here, there is a star, and there is another star here, another one. So basically a triangular lattice structure. So this kind of diamond shape, diamond correlation was shown as a reading order diamond-diamond correlation in the G2 spin wiki state in nearest neighbor Heisenberg model in this DMRG simulation study. And presumably, so this 12-side BBS state would be a long-range order counterpart of the G2 spin wiki state. And also, in this 36-side BBS state, so actually this 36-side BBS state was a strong ground state candidate before this DMRG calculation came out. So this BBS state has an interesting diamond pattern. So here, we can see a star diamond configuration at this center. And this star diamond configuration is surrounded by this perfect hexagon diamond configuration. So basically, we have a honeycomb lattice arrangement of this perfect hexagon. And then at the center of each big honeycomb placket, we have a star diamond configuration. So this is the structure of the 36-side BBS state. So this kind of BBS state, in this kind of BBS state, the elementary excitation is a spin triplet excitation. So basically, we just break one singlet bond into spin one triplet. Then the block state of the spin one triplet is basically a triplon excitation carrying spin one moment.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Can you repeat this 12? The balance bond solid on the left?
Yes.
Which appeared in the 2011 paper?
Yes.
By Yuan, Kuzan, White?
Yes.
This appears as what in that paper? I mean, that's not the ground state there. Can you
so,
repeat what you said about?
So they found, I mean, these people found a G2 spin wicket in a spin at nearest neighbor Heisenberg model on the Kagamera lattice. And they investigated diamond-diamond correlation in the spin wicket phase. And they found that the diamond pattern, diamond pattern appears in the diamond-diamond correlation in the spin wicket phase.
How should we interpret this in relation to valence bond solid? So definitely they were not talking about the valence bond solid.
No.
So how do we have to interpret that result?
So since the diamond pattern is the reading order diamond-diamond correlation, if there is a parameter in our system and we tune the parameter in such a way that the spin wicket state becomes the balance bond solid state, then the balance bond slowly state that will appear from the spin wicket will be like this because of the, as hinted by this diamond shape, diamond-diamond correlation. So that's what I was trying to say.
Okay, but do we have to understand it as a competing order that loses the battle? this is a spin liquid that has some structure.
Yes.
Like the one you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clearly qualitatively different than a valence bond solid. The ground state is not a valence bond solid.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is how do we interpret this? It's just the two patterns are there. So lack of pattern, which would be a spin liquid, and this pattern are there at the same time.
So in this case, so this pattern is a long range order. This pattern has a long range order. In the spin liquid, it has a short range order.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, then is there any other question about this? No? Yeah. So let me talk about a little bit about the experiments. So a lot of effort has been given to material system that realizes Kagoman lattice antiferromagnet. So up to now, there are several, but I'm showing just only three here. So the Hubbard-Smith-type and deformed Kagoman lattice antiferromagnet, and most recently reported vanadium oxide fluoride. Those are such a compound realizing the Kagoman lattice antiferromagnet. So interestingly, these materials are not solely described by a simple nearest neighbor Heisenberg model. So each material has some perturbation to the ideal Heisenberg model. So for instance, this Hubbard-Smith-type has a significant Dujail-Rudzinski-Moyar interaction, which is 10% of the Heisenberg coupling constant. And that much large DM interaction can change the nature of the ground state. So we need to understand the perturbation effect on the ground state. And also in this deformed carbomer antiferromagnet, the perturbation is basically distortion. It's this system is highly distorted from the ideal carbomer lattice geometry. So basically due to the distortion, the system has a two upside. The system realizes the two upside BBS state. And more interesting things are happening in this vanadium oxide fluoride. So this material is a little bit different from the previous two kappa-based Kagome antiferromagnet. So in this vanadium oxide fluoride, the spin half moment forming the Kagome lattice provided by the vanadium 4 plus ion. In this kappa compounds, the spin half moment comes from the kappa 2 plus ion. So the origin of the spin moment is different, and also the coordination ion, I mean the ions are coordinating each spin half vanadium 4 plus ion has an interesting structure. So if you look at one vanadium ion here, then there are five fluorine ions, and also there is an additional oxygen ion, which is like an impurity in the point of this fluorine. So this oxygen makes some interesting geometry in this material. So if we look at this Kagome triangle, then this oxygen ion are all pointing outward. But if we look at this down pointing triangle, then all the oxygens are pointing inward. So basically, these up triangle and down triangle are not equivalent. They are not related by the symmetry. So they are different triangles. So perhaps the simplest model for this material will be J1, J2 Heisenberg model, where J1 is for the down triangle and J2 is for the up triangle. So this can be, investigating that J1, J2 model will be quite interesting in the context of this material. Yes?
So there's no symmetry under, like, say, I don't know, reflection, or there's really no symmetry linking the one triangle and the two triangle?
So you mean, is there any symmetry?
Some reflection?
In this system?
Yeah.
No.
Can I ask a question about
yes.
the material?
Yeah.
So if I remember right, so
yes.
bilayer, right? So do you know how the two layers are stacked on top of the
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So basically, this material has a bilayer structure. So basically, there is two kinds of vanadium ions. So one is vanadium 4 plus, And the other one is a vanadium 3 plus. This is a spin half, and this is a spin 1. And this material, as Yuan mentioned, this material has a bilayer structure. So we have a bilayer Kagome radius here. And on each Kagome layer, we have a spin half moment, which is a vanadium 4 plus ion. And in between, there is a spin one moment, which is basically a vanadium 3 plus. And they are coupled. I mean, so they are connected by intermediate ions. For instance, this fluorine or oxygen, something like that. But if we consider the orbital structure at this vanadium ion and this vanadium 4 plus ion and this vanadium 3 plus ion, and they don't have much overlap. So basically, we just ignore this coupling, and we consider this Kagome layer as a independent, yeah, system.
So you're saying that there is argument saying that you can argue that the coupling
is small.
Those layers are very very.
Mm-hmm.
So experimentally, is it known what are the properties of this vanadium material?
So down to very low temperature, I don't remember the exact temperature, but yeah, people haven't seen any Mariani order in the system. And also they measured heat capacity of this system. I mean, the magnetic heat capacity, and they saw power behavior. So which is basically C is, so here alpha is 1.4. I'm not sure about this number. It's a close to one, something like that. But until now, there is no single crystal yet. So this region, I mean, all the experiments were done with polycrystalline samples.
About spin susceptibility?
Yeah, there is a spin measurement. Sorry, I don't remember exactly. We can discuss later. Sorry, yeah.
So for the second material, what would be the model Hamiltonian? You said it's not ideal.
It's quite complicated. As I mentioned, it has a significant radius distortion. So there are basically four different kinds of Heisenberg coupling. So these are J1, and this is J2, and there is a coupling connecting this baby star to another baby star. This is J3, and this remaining bonds are J4. On top of this four different Heisenberg coupling, there is also DM interaction as well. So it's quite complicated material. But the neutron scattering region in this work have shown, I mean, the work was done in conjunction with the dimer series expansion. They showed this system has a 12 psi BBS state. I mean, if you assume 12 psi BBS state, right, the bond, balance bond at this J1 ring, then we can get a spin triple relaxation spectrum consistent with the neutron scattering radar. So that's how they figure out the ground state. Okay. So, okay. Recapping the introduction part. So in the Kagome radius anti-ferromagnet, there exists a various exotic quantum state in the low energy space. Mm-hmm. And also, in order to understand such exotic quantum state are realized in real material system, we need to well understand about the perturbation beyond the ideal Heisenberg model. So that is the main message in this introduction. So in these circumstances, our work was motivated by the following two questions. So the first question is, can we capture the competing states that I discussed earlier within a simple effective theory? That's the one question. If it can, then we can get a better understanding about the low energy landscape in the Kagome-Rattice antiferromagnets. So for this question, recent G2 gauge theory by Yuan Wan, sitting in this room here, and his former PhD advisor, Oleg Chernyshev, their work suggests a good starting point for the effective theory. Basically, what they did is, so motivated by the G2 spin decay state in the recent DMRG simulation, they constructed phenomenological G2 gauge theory that captures low energy physics, I mean, low energy behavior of the G2 spin decay. So in our work, we generalized their effective G2 gauge theory. And then with the generalized theory, we find the other interesting state, I mean, the 12-side BBS and 36-side BBS state as a instability of the G2 spin naked phase. This part will be shown later. I'm advertising what I did in my work here. And the next question is, what would be effects of lower symmetry by in equivalent triangles on spin rickets and balance bond solid in Kagome-Rattice antiferromagnet? So in previous work, I mean, previous studies focused on the further neighbor Heisenberg interactions or Dujardin-Rudzinski-Moria interaction beyond the Heisenberg, nearest neighbor Heisenberg model. But this kind of in equivalent triangle structure hasn't been studied well. I mean, we don't know much about this type of perturbation. So it would be an interesting research direction. So in our work, focusing on the BBS phases found in our effective theory, we investigate the lower symmetry effect on these phases.
The previous slide?
Yes.
So is the minimum model here that you have in mind is that the up triangle has a G1 and the down triangle has a G2?
Sorry. Yeah.
That you have in mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the up triangle has J1 and the down triangle has J2?
That can be the simplest model, but I'm not considering that model particularly. Okay. So
you're saying that there could be multiple J's on one triangle?
So as a microscopic spin Hamiltonian, we can simply write down J1 coupling here and J2 coupling here. I mean, J1 for the up triangle, J2 for the down triangle, uniformly within a triangle. That can be the simplest microscopic Hamiltonian, but I'm not talking about the microscopic Hamiltonian. So my work is basically effective theory describing the low energy space. Okay. So as a result, as a result of this investigation, we find interesting dynamo melting effects in the 36-side BBS phase, as I show you later. Okay. So now I'm going to introduce my effective model. I mean, the model Hamiltonian in my effective theory. Actually, my model Hamiltonian can take various forms depending on our purpose. So actually my model can be written in the form of a quantum diamond model. Since the quantum diamond model provides an intuitive picture, I'm going to introduce the model in the form of a quantum diamond model. So this is my quantum diamond model. Actually, another term will be coming later. But so basically, the quantum diamond model consists of two terms. The first term is the diamond kinetic term with the coupling constant H. And the other term is the diamond interaction term with the coupling constant K. So this diamond kinetic term describes a diamond motion along various transition graphs within this 12-side baby star placket. So basically, within this placket, there are 32 different transition graphs. So basically, this diamond kinetic term describes transition diamond motion along these transition graphs. So this figure shows a diamond motion that happens within this 12-side transition graph. So basically, H switch one diamond configuration to another. And yes?
Is there some underlying symmetry which tells you that they should all appear with the same coefficient, or is that just like what?
You can have different coefficients, but actually, this model is not our original model. So our original model is a G2-gauge theory Hamiltonian. So this quantum diamond model has been determined from the G2-gauge theory Hamiltonian. So that's why we see the uniform coefficient. Yes.
Can you say a few words later about the G2-gauge theory itself?
Yes. If time is allowed. I'm not so sure about that. Okay. So this diamond interaction term, this one has an energy coefficient epsilon d, which depends on the diamond configuration. As you can see from this table, so for this configuration, so it's not uniform. It can have a different value depending on the diamond configuration. So simply speaking, when k is positive, this diamond interaction term favors this diamond shape diamond configuration. And also it favors this pineal star shape diamond configuration. In the other case, when k is negative, this diamond interaction term favors perfect hexagon geometry and double diamond diamond configurations. So that's the difference. Okay, this quantum diamond model preserves the ideal Kagome-Rattice symmetry. So as I mentioned earlier, we want to study the effect of the inequivalent triangle in our effective theory. So we employ a dimer potential here with the coupling constant A. So here we have a eta t. Eta t is a dimer potential energy coefficient, which has a different value depending on the local triangle dimer structure. So as you can see here, so if A is positive, then so that dimer potential favors the up triangle to be occupied by a dimer, and the down triangle to be unoccupied. And in the other case, the opposite is true. So in this way, so basically this is just a potential energy for the dimer at a local triangle. So in this way, we distinguish the up and down triangle, and this incorporates the lower symmetry by inequivalent triangle in our effective theory. So this was our model.
Is there some motivation for choosing values of eta like that?
This one also determined by our effective G2-gauge theory Hamiltonian. So our G2-gauge theory is like a like a boss behind a curtain. This is a sort of a spokesman of the G2-gauge theory Hamiltonian.
Isn't this eta t just determined by symmetry? In the Daimler model, triangles essentially come with two configurations, right? So either you have a dimer there or you don't have a dimer in that triangle. So you always shift energy in such a way that one is minus one half, another is three halves.
Based on the symmetry.
You can always shift energy such that the energy difference for occupying up and down triangle. And the energy cost for having a triangle there, a dimer there, and not having a dimer there, that's actually essentially controlled by changing energy J. Right? So that's basically the energy for a single, putting a single there.
Mm-hmm.
So there is just the, it's basically some sort of overall constant.
Yeah,
so
that.
Since there's not much degrees of freedom choosing.
Yeah, there can be another way to determine that dimer potential. But originally we started from the G2-gauge theory, and then we reformulate the G2-gauge theory into quantum dimer model and other types of model.
So
that's why.
Can you tell us another scale in your G2-gauge theory? What are the scales that?
Energy scale.
Yeah.
So basically let me show briefly the G2-gauge theory Hamiltonian. This is my G2-gauge theory Hamiltonian. So basically this Hamiltonian also has the same coupling constant, because this model is exactly equivalent to the quantum dimer model that I introduced earlier. So they are equivalent models, basically. Yeah. So all the epsilon d and eta t that came from the this original model.
What are the operators? What are the operators in the?
Oh, okay. So so this G2-gauge theory is defined on a honeycomb lattice. The honeycomb lattice is obtained by connecting all the centers of the triangles on the Kagoman lattice. So basically, on this honeycomb lattice, at each ring, we have two different degrees of freedom, sigma x and sigma z. So sigma x is basically like a electric field, and sigma z is a conjugate field to the sigma x. So basically, it's like the gauge field or vector potential, something like that. So in this term is it's like a E square term, and this one is the linear electric field term. So it's something like a coupling, the coupling between external electric field and the dipole moment. Something like this, so to speak. And this term is a gauge flux term. So basically the Fg is a product of a sigma z along this pocket. So it measures the gauge flux on this pocket. Yes?
Sorry, can you remind us, so in terms of the dimer configurations,
yeah.
How do I tell what the value of what sigma x?
So we can make a mapping between dimer configuration and the electric field configuration.
Can I just look at the dimer configuration and read out the state on the honeycomb, or you're saying it's critical?
Oh yes. The mapping node is like this. So this is my mapping node between the dimer configuration and the electric field. So sigma x, so this arrows represent the sigma x electric field. So when there is a two in one hour configuration, on this local triangle, then this this arrow configuration mapped into this this diamond configuration. Here, diamond is occupied at this ring. I mean, this ring has a incoming two arrows, and the other configuration is an empty triangle. I mean, so basically, on the Kagome Redis, we can have two different kinds of configuration. One is a diamond occupied, the other one is a diamond unoccupied. So this unoccupied triangle is basically mapped into this three out arrow configuration. So this is our mapping node. And so for instance, for this perfect hexagon dimer configuration, so this is the arrow configuration, I mean electric field configuration. So two arrows coming into this triangle, and same for this, and same for this. And for this three triangle, all the arrows are coming out and going out.
So it's an exact mapping.
It's exact mapping, yes. Exact mapping when, I mean, if, as long as we require this hardcode, this constraint. So basically, so here, the arrow is basically sigma x. So sigma x can take, this arrow can take a two orientation. So in other words, it can have a plus minus one value. So we, in our convention, we define, I mean, if the arrow is pointing from A subradius to B subradius on the honeycomb lattice, then the sigma x is a plus one. In the other case, the sigma x is minus one. So with this convention, so we put this constraint, I mean, basically, we consider a local triangle, and there is a three sigma x, and we multiply all, we take a product of all sigma x, then it should be positive one for A subradius, and it should be minus one for subradius B. Then we can only have these two types of diamond configurations.
So these constraints are outside Hamiltonian.
Sorry, or what?
So you have a Hamiltonian involving sigma x, sigma z.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have an additional constraint outside.
Mm-hmm.
This
yeah.
Is an extra constraint.
Yes, yes. Yeah, this is the constraint. Yeah. This is the constraint
anyway,
for, yeah, to ensure the hardcore diamond configuration in our theory. Yeah. So this constraint acts like a G2 gauge charge. I mean, so this value is like a charge for this for the A subradius. A subradius, the number of arrow coming out is just one. And for the B subradius, I think it's not necessary for now. Anyway, yeah, this is the constraint to ensure the hardcore dimer constraint, hardcore dimer Hilbert space. So can we go back to the original? Okay, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I have a question. So this like background configuration is like sort of implies something in your G2 gauge theory about the PSG for the Weismann, right? Do you know if that corresponds? Like, I don't know. I actually don't know if people have numerical evidence what that is. I guess, is there some reason other than that this mapping works that you would choose that configuration for the Kagome Z2 spin?
Because this theory was initially considered by Yuan Wan here in his previous work, and he successfully describe the G2, the phenomenology found in the DMRG simulation. So we just decided to use their nice work, I mean their nice theory, and extend that theory to capture other interesting phases in a general framework. So that's why, yeah, we are using this.
So it captures aspects of the symmetry, not just the topological. Is that even the phenomenology?
Sorry, I'm.
But when you say it captures features of the phenomenology, do you mean like it also captures things like transformation properties under symmetry as well, or is it captures it has the right topological order? Does it have the right?
Yeah, so topological order and also some dimer-dimer correlation in the spin-Rankine phase. That kind of properties found in the DMRG simulation. Yeah. Yes?
So what is the motivation? You just showed a Knoppmannian from the paper before.
Yes.
What is the motivation for that?
Which Hamiltonian are you talking about?
You just go one slide back.
This one?
This
one?
No.
Oh. Sorry. It doesn't really matter.
So is there some motivation for choosing that?
So choosing this Hamiltonian?
Yeah.
I mean, so basically our original interest was this question. Can this G2 gauge theory, what kind of balanced bond solid state contained in this G2 gauge theory?
There was some simple Knoppmannian that one can formulate in the G2 gauge theory, and then you want to study it properly.
Right. Yeah. Since it seems like well describing the G2 spin-Rankine phase.
Maybe I can comment here. So originally, we were motivated by thinking about what kind of single theory could capture the phenomenology in DMRG, basically those finite side effects you see in those cylinders. Right, see strange strategy modulation of spin-spin correlation around the cylinders. So a natural starting point would be a Dapper model where you do have a toroidal type Z to spin nipple, which is the mitigation. This RK Hamiltonian on the RK Dapper model on the honeycomb on carbonate, that is, where you have a Z to toroidal topological order. So it turns out that if you translate to Gaussian language, it's basically the first time. It's a pure flux. That's why this model is solved. So naturally, we want to add additional perturbation to it so that we can have additional, more physics. For instance, we can have deep dispersion to Lyson. So then you look at what are kind of perturbations that are actually allowed by the symmetry, which is essentially controlled by PSG anyway. So it turns out that the inversion symmetry plays a very important role. So there, you don't actually, you can't have, say, this term is proportional to A. So that term actually violates the inversion symmetry. So then you have to consider all the possible pairings of C lattice. And again, this form turns out highly constrained. It turns out that the only term that's reasonable term you can add, the minimal reasonable term you can add, is this K, which is coupled third neighbor sigma S. So, but all the things can be understood from the perspective of PSG. So basically, the PSG fits the term that you can add. Yeah.
And if you only have the first term, that just gives you all the ground state and all the diamond coverage.
Yeah, that's precisely so. Roxas-Hewitt state.
Mm-hmm.
So once you break the inversion as the trying to study this new compound, then obviously you can add this sigma x term, this A.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, right. I see. What was the point in the question? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, so can I go back to the previous slide? I skipped several ones. So we are talking about this more intuitive quorum diamond model. And so before we proceeding further, I want to show the phase diagram, the overall phase diagram. I mean, this one is a schematic phase diagram. I want to discuss which approach we take to obtain this phase diagram. So basically, to make the phase diagram in a simple form, we use this parameterization. So the coupling constant HKA, now written in terms of theta and phi. So Along the radial outward direction, the theta changes from 0 to pi over 2. And along the circumference angular direction, the phi changes from 0 to pi. So this is the this is the new parameters. And so interestingly, this model has a two ejectively solvable remits. So as represented by this, the blue dot and green line. So at this blue dot, so basically we only have this H term. So at this, so we don't have this K and A. So basically the diamond kinetic term. So in this case, it is well known that the ground state wave function is given by the RBB wave function, which is basically linear combinations of all possible dimer product state. So this point is, this ejectively solvable point is basically lying in a spin liquid region. So in the opposite case, so in this green line, so the situation is the opposite. So we don't have H, we only have a K and A, the diamond interaction and potential energy terms. So in this case, so the Hamiltonian is already diagonalized in the diamond product state. So basically in this green line, so the model has a degenerate ground state manifold, and each state in the ground state manifold represent a balanced bond solid state. So for instance, at this point, I mean phi equals zero. So we find various balanced bond solid state at this green line. So for instance, in this range, when phi is greater than zero and less than phi a is roughly pi over three. So in this case, we find this 12-psi BBS state in the ground state manifold. And this is the only balanced bond solid state that we find in this case. And in the opposite case, I mean, in this part, the K was positive with a positive A. In the opposite side, with negative K with positive A, we find that the ground state manifold is highly degenerate compared to this case. And there are so many different BBS state. And we find this 6-psi BBS state as well as this 36-psi BBS state in this parameter region. So this one was already discussed in the introduction. And this one is a little bit new one. So this 6-psi BBS state has an interesting dimer structure. Basically, it's featured with these parallel dimers and also these zigzag dimers. So this kind of interesting dimer, I mean, balanced bond solid state appears in this region. And in between here, some incommensurate BBS state appears. So we didn't put much focus on this region. So we only focused on this and that. So there might be some interesting BBS space in this region, but we don't know yet. So basically, in this phase diagram, at the center, we have a spin liquid region. And at the edge, we have a balanced bond solid region. So these two distinct phases meet in this intermediate region. Basically, this dashed line represents a schematic phase boundary between spin liquid and balanced bond solid.
So for phi between 0 and phi A, did you say there's a unique ground state?
Yes, unique ground state.
And then between phi B and phi, is there extensive?
Highly degenerate? Yeah.
Is it extensive?
Yeah, yes. So these are just some of the ground states. And so Yuan and Chernyshev's work, I mean, their effective G2 gauge theory for the spin liquid state found in the spin DMRG simulation, that can be represented as this star, I mean, at this point, with this point, inside this phase boundary. So basically, this point is lying in the spin liquid region. OK. So in this phase diagram, basically our main interest is in this region. The region close to this space boundary, but in the balanced bone solid side. So around this phase boundary, all the coupling constants are comparable. So to find a ground state in this region is quite challenging. I mean, one way to find the ground state is just to directly solve this quantum diamond model with some numerical simulation. But instead of doing that, we try to understand the BBS phases around this phase boundary by constructing Landau theory. So the Landau theory is Landau theory for the BBS phases is constructed by using the Bayesian condensation as an order parameter. So basically, we can understand the transition from G2 spin Ricci to balanced bone solid in the framework of Bayesian condensation. So here in the G2 spin Ricci side, the Bayesian has a gap. I mean, it's a well-defined excitation. But when Bayesian is, Bayesian becomes gamless, and the Bayesian is condensed, even though the Bayesian doesn't have doesn't carry any spin, it can carry momentum. So that moment, due to that momentum, the system can break the lattice symmetry. So basically, the system enter balanced bone solid state. So here, so Bayesian is gapped, and here Bayesian is condensed. So Bayesian condensation can be used as a order parameter in the spin decay to BBS transition. So basically, this is our strategy for the investigation of the BBS phases around this region. Okay. So for this purpose, first we need to figure out the Bayesian clearly in our effective theory. So in order to do that, we take several mappings in such a way that the Bayesians become identifiable and also become local objects in the theory. So this is the mapping that we take for the model Hamiltonian. So initially, I introduced the quantum diamond model on the Kagome lattice. At this level, the Bayesian is a non-local topological vortex excitation. So that is not easy to easy to treat. So we take, so we reformulate this, so originally the sequence was backward, but just a formulation. So this quantum diamond model is mapped into the G2 gauge theory. In this G2 gauge theory, the Bayesian becomes a flux excitation in the gauge field. But still, even at this level, the Bayesian is a non-local object. So to render the Bayesian as a local object, we take a dual mapping for this G2 gauge theory. Then we get a dual aging model. So in this dual aging model, the Bayesian is described by a local aging spin on the dual lattice. So now it becomes a local object. So mostly, so in the remaining part of our work, the most of the calculation will be done with this dual aging model.
Yeah. Mapping?
Sorry, what?
An exact dual mapping?
Exact.
The dual mapping?
Yes, dual mapping, yes. So, okay. How much time do I have? What is that?
Usually it's in about an hour. How much more?
About an hour. Okay. Then Then, okay, then I'm going to skip this GTH theory part. So if time is allowed later, then I'll talk of, I'll explain this part in detail. So let me get straight to the dual aging model first. I know this is funny. Yeah, even though the title is G2-gauge theory, but I haven't talked about the G2-gauge theory in detail. But anyway, yeah, so this is my dual aging model. So okay, so this so now we have a so aging spin as a degrees of freedom. So tau g is the aging spin, and tau x is a conjugate operator to the aging spin. So so with this model, so this G2 spin naked and balanced bond solid can be understood in the following way. So as we already discussed, when H is large, we have a we are in the deep inside the G2 spin naked region. So we just ignore this term. Then so the ground state of this dual aging model is basically a disordered state, right? So we don't have a we don't have so basically in this region tau g is zero. Okay, and in the opposite case, in deep inside the balanced bond solid state, which is possible when k and a are much larger than h. So in this case, basically the due to the this aging interaction, aging spin interaction, the system, the ground state of system will have magnetic order. So basically, there is a non-zero expectation value of tau g. So tau g is zero here, tau g is non-zero here. So it's like a Bayesian condensation order parameter. In fact, so this g2, I mean tau g operator, is a Bayesian creation or annihilation operator. And the conjugate operator, tau x, is basically a Bayesian density operator. So that's a physical interpretation of this dual aging model. So as I mentioned earlier, we are interested around the region close to this transition point. So around this region, it is reasonable to take a soft spin approximation. So which is basically, we just replace these tau g operators with a coarse-grained real-valued scalar field phi here. And the effect of this conjugate term, conjugate operator tau x. So this provides a dynamics to this the tau g operator. So the dynamics effect is incorporated by employing another conjugate momentum operator pi here. So this soft spin model is the final model Hamiltonian that we are going to play with. So basically, okay, so I think I missed something. So basically, as I mentioned, this tau g operator is a Bayesian annihilation and creation or annihilation operator, and this is a Bayesian density operator. So basically, this dual aging model is a hopping model, I mean, Bayesian hopping model. So same for the this soft Bayesian model. So basically, we have a hopping Hamiltonian with the Bayesian excitation here. So from this soft spin Hamiltonian, we can get a Bayesian excitation spectrum. So basically, since the balanced bond solid state is determined by Bayesian condensation, the lowest energy Bayesian excitation that will be condensed, that will determine the structure of a balanced bond solid. So we focus on the soft Bayesian mode, I mean, with the lowest energy. And we analyze the symmetry property of the soft Bayesian modes. So yeah, something like this. So the soft Bayesian mode can be different depending on the parameter region. So here in this table, I'm showing four different cases that I'm going to consider in the rest of this work. So basically, in the case one is this. So just a phi equals zero line. So positive k, a is zero. So in this case, we have a full Bayesian soft modes. And in the other case, negative k. I mean, in the case two, negative k with zero a, we have eight Bayesian modes. So which is quite many compared to other cases. So as you will see, we're gonna have a very complicated Landau-Ginzburg theory. And so these first two cases are for the the ideal Kagome lattice systems. The other two cases are for the system with a lower symmetry by inequivalent triangle. So degeneracy means so these are the soft position in the first Brillouin zone. So we have two position, and at each position and at each momentum position, there is two degenerate Bayesian soft modes. So in total, we have four.
So where does it come from?
That degeneracy. Let me think first. That is related with the rotation symmetry, but I don't remember exactly what was the reason. Sorry. We can discuss later. Sorry. At the moment, I don't remember clearly. That's a good question. Okay. So for the case three, we have on top of the positive k, we have a positive a as well in this region, and we have a four Bayesian modes. And in the other case, same is true, but the soft mode structure is different. I mean, just only the same number of Bayesian soft modes. Okay. So this is the cases that we are going to consider. So in fact, this Bayesian is, so naively speaking, the Bayesian is a fractionalized particle of a spin singlet dimer, as spinon is a fractionalized particle of a spin moment. So because of that, the Bayesian follows a projective representation of symmetry group. So we should consider PSG structure for each case. And we did, and using the soap mode and the PSG analysis information, we construct the Ginzburg-Randau functional, and we solve this functional for the possible balanced bond solid solid phases around this phase boundary. So this is the case one. So as I mentioned, there are four Bayesian soft modes. So we have a four-dimensional order parameter here, and with this order parameter and the PSG structure related associated PSG structure, then we can write down this Ginzburg-Randau functional to fourth order. So to this fourth order, we have a O4 symmetry. But this I1, I2 terms break the O4 symmetries. So basically, these symmetry breaking terms will generate interest. Basically generate interesting structure in the balanced bond solid state. So we solve this Randau-Ginzburg functional at the mean field level. So basically, we assume the order parameter is spatially and temporally uniform. And we ignore this term, and we minimize this potential term. Then we get the mean field value for the order parameter, and with the value, we calculate dimer density for each phase. So actually, I haven't discussed about the relationship between the dimer density and sigma x electric field and this tau z, the Bayesian creation operator. So if time is allowed, I'll I'll explain it later. sorry. So first, I'm going to show the region, I mean the balanced on solid phases that I obtained from this Ginzburg-Landau theory. So in this case, this is the mean field phase diagram. This is A1 and this is A2. So here in this region, we obtained the 12-side BVS state that was found in this exactly solvable case. So this is the region for this case one. And for the case two, with a negative K, we have a 8 sub-bison mode. As you can see here, it's a very complicated. Anyway, we did the same mean field approach. We took a same mean field approach to this Ginzburg-Landau theory. And these are the mean field phase diagrams that we obtained. So it looks complicated, but basically there are two different types of group in this phase diagram. So first, A group. So BBS 2A, 2A prime, 2A double prime. So these three phases are all 36-side BBS state, having these characteristics, star and perfect hexagon dimer structure. So this is the simple figure that I showed you earlier. So basically these three phases are essentially this phase. And the other phase is this B group. So BBS 2B, 2B prime, 2B double prime. So these three phases, I mean, these three BBS structure has a 36-side unit cell, but it's quite different from the well-known 36-side BBS state. So basically this state, I mean, this BBS state can be understood as a dimer modulation on top of this six-side BBS state. So even though this state has a six-side unit cell, so let's imagine we put a dimer modulation, dimer density modulation on top of this dimer configuration. Then we get this and this and this type of BBS structure. So in this BBS 2B prime, so we can see this zigzag dimer pattern, right? So in this zigzag dimers, we have a strong dimer density compared to other dimers. So in this case, we see the parallel dimer as the strongest dimers. And here, we see both zigzag and parallel, zigzag and parallel. So these three phases are basically the dimer modulated six-side BBS state. So recalling the fact that we found this six-side BBS state at this exactly solvable limit, this is an interesting result because,
So these two groups, they are degenerate, right?
No.
At the mean field level.
No, they are not degenerate. I mean, so in this parameter space, this is A1 and A2. Yeah, they appear in different parameter region. Yeah.
And in the second case where you were showing this dimer modulation.
Yeah.
So should I think about that as some kind of form factor on top of the bottom right pattern that you're showing, or like how should I think about this? It's a different.
So basically, there is another weight vector on top of this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not a single Q weight vector. It's positional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are multiple Q.
They break different translation symmetry, or
which one? This one and
yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in these phases are more. More lattice symmetries are broken.
Between the six BBS and one of the modulated.
Yeah.
Different translation symmetry?
Yeah, they have different translation symmetry. I mean, it's a, so basically this state has a, the size of unit cell is a 6 side here. But in these three cases, the unit cell size is 36 side. Yeah, so unit cell is enlarged by the dynamo modulation. Okay, so this was about the case 2, and this is the case 3. Case 3 is a positive K and with an anisotropy, triangular anisotropy. But interestingly, in this case, we have the same Landau-Ginzburg theory up to sixth order. I mean, same Landau-Ginzburg theory as the case 1 up to the sixth order. So basically, we got the same measure. So recalling the fact that, so even with the finite A at this exactly solvable limit, we only get the 12 side unit cell, I mean 12 side BBS state in the ground state manifold, which means that ground state manifold is well separated from the higher excited state. So I think that is, I mean, that is sort of reflected in this region as well. So yeah, so that's why we get the same region in this case. And now it's the last case. Okay, in this case, we got four different BBS patterns, and if we focus on this A and B, then we see some familiar patterns, which is a perfect hexagon here. Okay, so there is a perfect the honeycomb arrangement of perfect hexagons, and also we see some dimers connecting these perfect hexagons, which were existing in this ideal 36 side BBS pattern as well. So in this phase, in this BBS pattern, the David star dimer configuration is only missing. And if we look the other BBS pattern, then we see some perfect hexagon structure, but we don't see the David star configuration, and also some of the perfect hexagons are missing here. So basically, these two phases are considered as a variation of this 36 side BBS state. So we interpret this phases as a result of dimer melting, especially on the star dimer configurations. And this dimer melting effect caused by the lower symmetry by inequivalent triangles in this theory. And this type of dimer modulated a 6 side BBS state, I mean, it was found in this region with the inclusion of the inequivalent triangle effect. We don't find any analog of the 6 side BBS space. Okay, this is the all I wanted to say. So this is the final, I mean, the same phase diagram that I showed you earlier. So around this region, I mean, close to the phase boundary, here we found 12 side BBS state, the same phase as what we found in this exactly solvable limit. So basically, yeah, this 12 side BBS extends to this phase boundary, I think. And in the opposite side, we found 36 side BBS, well-known 36 side BBS state, and also dimer modulated 6 side BBS state here. Okay, so interestingly, this effective theory captures various exploratory phases suggested and founded in the Kagome lattice antiferromagnet. So presumably, this effective theory can be used for better understanding on the Kagome lattice antiferromagnet. And this is my summary. So these are all addressed in the in the main body of the talk. So I just want to make a comment on the future work. So I think so it would be an interesting work if we can investigate which microscopic spin Hamiltonian is mapped into our effective theory in the presence of a triangular anisotropy. Maybe the simplest one will be a J1, J2 Heisenberg model. I think, yeah. So if somebody can do DMLG with some other numerical simulation on J1, J2 Heisenberg model, then that can be interesting. Yeah, thank you.